Hello, I'm Eddie Merckx. Welcome to the VeloCast.
And welcome to the first episode of the VeloCast Tour de France 2010 tour coverage. My name is Scott.
And I'm John. Before we get into the coverage, I think I'm in a position to reveal the... And it actually makes me very sad, and, you know, after the Wall Street Journal's revelations, to reveal the first doping positive of the Tour de France.
Well, this is obviously a major scoop. Go on.
You've been at the cough syrup, haven't you?
I wish I'd been at more cough syrup, to be honest with you. I sound like Barry White today. So
You sound like me, actually, which is, I mean, it's a good thing for you, but it'll make it confusing for the listeners.
Well, this podcast's going out to all the special sexy ladies out there. Right, anyway, the 97th Tour de France kicked off today with the 8.9-kilometre prologue through the streets of the Dutch city of Rotterdam.
Ah, and it was very exciting once we got to watch it. I mean, I was really disappointed at how long it took the host broadcaster to start, you know, putting out live pictures. Now, with the coverage being late, you know, the live coverage from the Dutch host broadcasters, they had some footage of Cavendish on Eurosport talking about his, you know, the two-fingered salute and his behaviour at the Tour de Suisse, which we've poured, I think, justifiable scorn upon. And he talked about his two-finger salute being a tribute to the English archers at Agincourt.
Oh, yeah, right, okay, well, that's fairly sensitive.
Do you think, before a PR officer got his hands on it, Cav had ever heard of Agincourt? I mean, let's just leave it at that. The boys, he doesn't strike me as a history buff.
I mean, surely it would be better just to fess up and say, I was a bit stupid. I'm a young guy, you know, I'm really sorry, I apologise. Heat of the moment, just after a stage, so on and so forth. That's just farcical coming up with this Agincourt nonsense.
However, revisionist shite, that's what that is.
Very, very good. When I first started watching it, it was very wet. I mean, it looked like a winter day in Glasgow more than anything else.
Yeah, and I mean, Wiggins, who I think we'll talk about in a minute, had done a kind of Formula One qualifying lap thing where he'd jiggled about his start time because Brailsford and his weather boffins had decided it was going to rain late. And in fact, they got it exactly wrong because the final guys offered a noticeably drying road.
Oh, definitely. And that was something I was going to ask because Wiggins came in 10 minutes 56 seconds, went very early, and from what I understood, he just essentially... decided to go earlier than his fourth place on the road should have dictated that he'd gone. And it was a terrible decision. So I was going to ask you, who makes that decision? Is that Wiggins himself or is that the team or a combination of both?
I think it's a combination of both. I think it genuinely is like Formula One qualifying. But, you know, you look at this prologue around Rotterdam, it's as close as you can get to a velodrome that's actually on the road. So I expected far more of Wiggins, and people who were in equally bad conditions, you know, finished way above him. So whether he took it too easy, you know, whether he's not got the form yet, because we've talked about folk wanting to peak in the third week, I don't know, but for me, he's the big loser today. I mean, I was really disappointed with Brad's performance.
Yeah, I thought he looked very, very uneasy on what were admittedly very slippy roads, but as you say, there were people going out who were, you know, expected to do... as good a time at roughly the same kind of place, and he was falling far, far behind.
Oh,
him.
No, no, he was way off the page in terms of the results we expected.
I genuinely think he was scared. I think the conditions scared him, and he thought discretion was the better part of valour there, and that he didn't want to go round a corner and end up going down and all of a sudden we've got a broken collarbone and your tour's over.
But an ankle. I mean, remember that terrifying thing with Chris Boardman at St. Brooke, where his team car ran him over?
Yes, absolutely. Brad himself said the prologue is not the be-all and end-all for him. He said he could push it to the limit, but he wasn't prepared to risk it. And he was then asked about the rain staying on for everyone else so that it would obviously kind of reflect in the times. He said, quite frankly, I couldn't give a monkey's. So,
well, the thing
Brad
is,
it's all, back to his old self there.
It's all very well saying it's not the be-all and end-all, but, you know, you could look at a Contador or, you know, or a Hessink or an Armstrong in the mountains, find it easy to take back a minute, say. Wiggins was primarily a follower in the mountains last year. You know, when we raved about his climbing, you know, when it was the revelation of the tour, you know, trying to picture him with a form to take back a minute loss now, it's hard.
Yeah, you're talking about someone that needs to attack in the mountains.
Exactly.
As opposed to just hang on the wheels of those who are specialist climbers. And the thing we've got to remember as well, John, is that this is the last time trial until the penultimate day. There is no other time trial in the rest of this three-week tour.
Well, that's not strictly true. I think we'll have a couple of team time trials trying to get back on after the cobbles are hit and somebody drops back.
Well, the early leader in the day and someone whose lead almost brought him the win was Tony Martin, who came in at 10 minutes and 10 seconds.
Oh, the telly was so cruel. I mean, it was that kind of... They kept flashing to him as people... He looked so happy and so confident right up until the point that Cancellara took off down the start ramp. And then it was just cruel showing that boy's face because he knew what was going to happen.
Yeah, and I noticed his girlfriend, or I presume it was his girlfriend, was sitting next to him. And as you say, you could just see the horror on his face as the seconds were ticking by all too quickly.
Yeah, I mean, awesome ride by Martin. I mean, he's clearly got form. And he could have held out. I mean, it was entirely dependent on the weather. But once Fabian set off doing that ramp, it was clear nobody else was going to win.
No, I mean, and we used the word imperious for Alberto Contador in recent times. But if ever anyone looked imperious on a bike, it was Fabian Cancellara today.
Actually, in more ways than one. Did you see his helmet?
His helmet, yes. That's exactly where I was going. That's exactly where it was going with that.
It reminded me, do you remember when Cipollini dressed up as Caesar?
As Caesar, yeah, with a toga.
If he'd worn that time trial helmet, it would have fitted in perfectly.
No, Spartacus looked absolutely awesome today.
No, I mean, lovely helmet. It looked fast, but he did. He looked awesome. There wasn't a battery in sight, in spite of your tweet about the noise when he was on his turbo trainer.
No, I was just having a dig. There was a shot, obviously, of him doing his warm-up on the rollers before he was due to come out, and you could hear this whining noise. And I said, are we all sure that that's actually coming from the rollers and not from the battery in his bike?
He did what he does best. I mean, I genuinely don't think I've seen a better time trialist ever. And I mean, I've said that before in the Velocast. I mean, that's what, 4, 5, 6 years he's dominated the prologue in the tour?
That's his fourth prologue win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chapeau.
Absolutely. And he came in with a winning time of 10 minutes dead, which put Tony Martin from Columbia HTC at 10 minutes 10 seconds in second place. Now, Britain's David Miller came in third at 10 minutes 20.
Which is the best ride he's done for ages. I mean, you know, that was a great ride.
It was. Did you see his skin suit, though?
What was it? Somebody said he looked like a sparrow or something.
No,
when he looked.
It was a very, very
flying squirrel.
A flying squirrel. That's exactly what he looked like. Yeah. If ever he moved out from his aero position, for some reason, this skin suit was designed to be perfectly skin tight in the aero position. But as whoever it was on Twitter said, he looked like a flying fox as soon as his hands went to, you know, the other bars.
I must have been away at that point. I didn't notice the flying fox thing. But I mean, I've been critical of Miller about, you know, how he's not the rider he was before his you know, his admission and his conversion about doping. But today was the best ride I've seen, I think, from him since he won the prologue, you know, when he beat Armstrong all those years ago. So, you know, chapeau, Dave. Good ride.
Yep, he said himself it was a really fast course and he actually really enjoyed it. And I thought he looked great as well. Right, before we get to fourth and sixth place on the road, I wanted to talk just quickly about Geraint Thomas, who I thought put in a great ride, coming in fifth at 10 minutes and 23 seconds.
It's going to be great to see the British champion's jersey in the roads of France. I mean, it really is.
Yeah, he said he was talking about that as well, saying that he's got a very subtle Union Jack helmet to wear tomorrow. And he said, I want to keep it retro and old school, wear black shorts.
Yeah, quite right. I mean, he's a man on form. You know, his background in the track means that, actually, unlike his team leader Wiggins, he performed as we expected today. In fact, he surpassed our expectations. But the Sky team have got some strength and depth there. I'm still... I mean, I've been on record for about the last week of saying I'm a bit worried about Wiggins, and I still am. I expected him to shine today, and he didn't. But Thomas, you know, Thomas took some of the limelight that we expected Wiggins to get. So, well done.
Yeah, definitely. Now, as I mentioned there, the fourth and sixth place finishers were...
Who were they?
One completely unknown rider called... Now, let me get this right. Lance... Is that Armstrong? Lance Armstrong, yeah.
Lamstrong,
yeah. He finished at 10 minutes 22, and sixth place was Alberto Contador at 10:27. Now, I was watching cover. I was watching.
Now, I'm laughing because we've talked about this before we record, yeah. So I kind of know what's going on here.
I watched the coverage on ITV today, and I love him dearly. I really, really do. Uncle Phil Liggett was just bouncing up and down and couldn't contain his excitement over Armstrong's psychological victory over Alberto Contador just in the prologue here. And I was going to ask you...
I don't think Bert's going to be losing any sleep.
No, I don't think he is. Because, well, first of all, I mean, we talked about this going into the recording today. Bert looked like he was taking it really easy on the corners, coasting round.
On one of the corners, he stopped pedalling a good 50, 60 yards before the corner.
Yeah. I wanted to ask, I mean, as I said, Phil and Paul were getting terribly, terribly excited over Armstrong's performance. And the question is, should we read anything into it? I mean, I suppose you could say this is what a man who's nearly 39 beating Contador, who is what age is Contador now? 24, 25, something like that?
Nah, he's a young whippersnapper.
He's a young whippersnapper.
To be honest, on a pan flat course, over 9K, I mean, we talked, in fact, Greg LeMond talked in that university talk that we've quoted so often about how after 2 or 3 months of training, although he was a fat old tourist, he was able to reproduce, you know, his wattage output from his peak. So to a certain extent, over this kind of distance, age isn't a huge factor. There were no real climbs. It wasn't a terribly technical course. So if Armstrong was going to do well anywhere, it would be in a course like this. But having said that, you know, he did do really well. His time trialing's been incredibly dodgy this season, by his own standards. I mean, it's still been great. But, you know, he pulled out of the bag today, but Bert was definitely soft-pedalling in the corners. You know, he was aware that the race, again, that terrible cliche, was his to lose. And on the greasy roads, he didn't want to take any chances. So I'd probably give them an 8 out of 10, both of them, maybe a 9 out of 10. But there was nothing to split them. And once we come to the hills, we'll see. I mean, we'll see.
Yeah, okay, just let's talk briefly then about some other riders, obviously, we saw today. Both the Schlecks, Frank coming in, I think that would be about, 55 seconds back on Cancellara, and Andy Schleck finished...
Oh, dear.
Yeah, 11 minutes, 9 seconds, so significantly down. And I'm just...
Yeah, with his improved time trial.
With his improved
time. Geez, that's improved. Think about this, is 9K, okay? What's the last one? 52K? We talked about how you'd have to have 4 or 5 minutes. I mean, that's still true. The Schlecks, if this is an indication of their time trial in form, they have to rip Bert apart in the mountains. Or Armstrong or whoever, you know, after the first week. We've talked about the risks that are inherent in the first week. They need to dominate the race when it's going uphill, and I can't see them doing that. So if this is their time trial and performance, they're out of it as major contenders.
Yeah, I mean, they were talking, 30 seconds to a minute or so? I'm just trying to do the mental maths in my head, that they've already lost to Contador and Armstrong already.
Yeah, that's a minute they've got to take back, and then they've got to take another 5 or 6 before the final time trial. Not going to happen.
Cadel Evans, I thought, did a good performance today, coming in at 10 minutes and 40.
Actually, Cadell, the one place I don't mind watching him cycling is on a time trial bike, because the aero bars make his upper body quite still, so you don't get that whole kind of wrestling your bike thing. I still can't see him recovering for the Giro well enough. I think he'll do a creditable performance, but today he did well. I mean, he did as expected, but he's going to be tired once we hit the third week of the race.
Sure. Okay, anything else you need to cover here?
Basso was 44 seconds back, which for him actually wasn't bad. But I think the same thing applies to him as applied to Evans. I mean, it's going to be a tiring race for him. Other than that, the weather forecast tomorrow is crap. I mean, it really is awful. And they're hitting roads where, even on a good day, it was going to be windswept and testing. We in Scotland have got torrential rain and gale force winds, and we're not that far away from Holland, you know, in terms of weather patterns. We could see some serious splits in some big echelons tomorrow. So if you're light, I'd be a bit scared about going into tomorrow's first road stage.
I wonder who you could be talking about there.
Well, not everybody. He's, you know, I talked on our last kind of full show, which was strangely freeform, and people still seem to quite enjoy it. But I talked about the, you know, the scary picture of the Schlecks and how light they were. They're going to struggle in crosswinds. Bert, he's going to struggle in crosswinds. People like Heesink, we could actually... We were talking about the third stage, you know, the cobbles, or stage three. The cobbles being particularly testing. Tomorrow, if the weather forecasts anything to go by, the echelons could form early and you could see some big splits tomorrow. So it's an exciting first week.
Yeah, which is essentially what happened last year, and Contador was
Armstrong was in the right place
at the right
Contador
time, and Contador wasn't. Yeah, and he got criticised for it. So yeah, you could be right there. If the wind starts playing as big a part as it looks like it's going to, then, as you say, could be an exciting race straight away.
Here, I'm actually seriously pissed off.
Go on.
I just realised, I'm sitting here, we're chatting away, at this point last year, this very point, and I was sitting in a bar in Brittany with Wi-Fi, talking to you via Skype on an iPhone, with some nice nibbles and a tasty beer in front of me. And now I'm in Peebles having delivered post all day. There's something wrong.
There's something wrong with that picture. We should just point out, we are actually doing this via Skype at this very minute. We couldn't possibly stomach seeing each other for 3 weeks every day, so...
That's not going to happen, dude. I mean, if you want a Velocast, Skype is it, you know, because, I mean... There will be fisticuffs if we're seeing each other every day.
Right, anyway, thank you for joining us for the prologue of the 2010 Tour de France, and we hope you can join us again tomorrow for the 223 kilometre stage from Rotterdam to Brussels.